Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza, working on this pre-recorded program, Very Remote. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Thursday, July 1st, 2021. Authorities in Eastern Equatoria State have imposed a curfew due to insecurity in and around Torit Town.
Because it is a general issue now, and we know also very that so it will actually cause problems. The situation will be out of hand.
And four people were killed during a cattle raid in Lake State.
This morning, we have received the information that there was an attack that occurred yesterday night at the place called Maliar, Lake Payam. Unknown armed men came and attacked people. And according to the reports, we are told that four people were killed.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The Eastern Equatoria State Government has imposed a curfew from 7 p.m. to 8 a.m. due to insecurity in the area. The State Information Minister confirms the decision was made to protect the public, especially non-governmental organizations and UN workers, from attacks by a vigilante group known locally as Monyomiji. The minister says police have been deployed around the compounds of humanitarian agencies and on the streets to enforce order. For VOA News, Winnie Chirino reports from Juba.
Yesterday, a group of young men in Torit County who call themselves Monyomiji demonstrated on the streets of Torit Town against what they say is discriminatory employment practices by UN agencies and other non-government organizations operating in the area. Santo Kaliva, a member of the group, says young men took to the streets because they received no feedback since submitting a petition to the government back in April for an assessment on the recruitment process of NGOs and UN agencies. Kaliva says the youth will take further unspecified actions after 72 hours if the NGOs and UN agencies don't evacuate Torit, Equatorial, and Lopa counties. He warns the youth will do more to fight for their rights and ensure fair job recruitment.
The government must solve this issue, because if you fail to do so, then it will actually worsen the situation. I wanted to also inform NGOs and UN agencies that they should cooperate with the government so that this issue should be addressed, not only here in Eastern Equatoria, but should be also addressed somewhere in other 10 states, because it is a general issue now, and we know also very that to do so, it will actually cause problems. The situation will be out of hand.
During yesterday's demonstration, one young man carried a banner reading, "Foreigners working for companies must leave Torit, Equator, and Lopa within 72 hours. If not, ? Eastern Equatoria State Information Minister Patrick Oting says state officials are concerned about the threats because they do not know what the Monyomiji intend to do.
We ban the gatherings within Torit. That people should not be gathering in big quantity in various places. The gatherings, the parties, the traditional dancers, that is going on within the town. And in line with that, we also came up with a curfew. With the curfew, it was effected from yesterday, which is the 30th of June 2021, from 7 p.m. to 6 a.m. in the morning. So no one will be allowed to move during the night.
During yesterday's demonstration, one young man carried a banner reading, "Foreigners working for companies must leave Torit, Equator, and Lopa within 72 hours. If not, ? Eastern Equatoria State Information Minister Patrick Oting says state officials are concerned about the threats because they do not know what the Monyomiji intend to do. Shortly after the demonstration, Oting says government officials held a Security Council meeting where they condemned the Monyomiji's demand and ordered the curfew.
We have the operation units within the state that is doing that. And it is their work. So they will be the one moving all around from one place to know that the curfew is implemented. For example, if they go to the shop, at the time has come, they'll have to tell you, you close the shop because the time for the curfew is there. And then you close the shop. You go the same thing to the bars and other places. If you disobey, they're not supposed to take the shift.
Oting says security forces will arrest whoever they find moving on the road beyond the curfew. He says they will be released the following morning. Joel Ohisa, a Boda Boda driver in Turit, says he worries the curfew will affect him and his colleagues because most of Boda Boda drivers are students who go to school in the morning and work in the evening to provide for their families.
During the daytimes, Boda Bodas are many. Reaching evening, you'll be less in numbers. That is when I'll get something more than the people who worked during the morning time. But if the curfew is like this, I may not get the usual amount I used to get.
About a month ago, the Monyamiji attacked aid workers who come from other parts of the country. Minister Oting is urging aid agencies to continue to provide humanitarian assistance to the people of Eastern Equatorial State, regardless of the recent threats by the Monyamiji. For VOA News, I am Winnie Sereno in Juba.
Still on matters related to insecurity, police in Lake State say four people, including two children, were killed and scores of others wounded during a cattle raid in Rumbek Central County on Wednesday. For VOA News, William Sande Mabor has this story from Rumbek.
Police spokesperson Major Elijah Mabor Makwaj says armed youth suspected of being from Go community of Shebet County attacked the Roop community of Malek Payam in Rumbek Central County.
This morning, we have received the information that there was an attack that occurred yesterday night at the place called Maliar, Malek Payam. Unknown armed men came and attacked people. And according to the reports, we are told that four people were killed. Among them, two are children and two elderly people.
Major Makwai says fighting is ongoing in the area. He says the attackers are revenging last weekend's incident in which armed youth from the Roop community attacked the rail cattle camp belonging to Gok community of Shebet County. He says 14 people were killed and 22 others were wounded in that attack. Makwai says police sent one group of officers to Malek Payam on foot, while other officers have hired motorbikes to reach the area to stop the fighting and identify the attackers.
Already we have sent one squad of our police force to go and monitor the situation using just putting other means like motorbike, because that area where the fighting is taking place is inaccessible. There's nowhere that the vehicles can go. Already the fighting is taking place, and these are the people from one state. What we only can do is to monitor the situation.
Makwaj advises the communities in Lagos State to desist from violence, saying too many lives have been lost already.
Stop revenge attack and cattle raiding, simply because the revenge will not take us to anywhere. Put in mind that the type of revenge people are doing now will not end the problem. Simply because today your relative is killed, and then you plan for a revenge. You go and kill a different person who didn't wrong anything to you. And when you go and kill him, his relatives also will feel paining and decide to go back for revenge. This circle of revenge will be continuous.
Right Reverend Isaac Diawater, Bishop of Archdiocese of the Episcopal Church of South Sudan, has condemned the attacks and counterattacks. He says there is no justifiable reason for young people to kill each other. Bishop Ater is recommending that government and religious leaders to go to the cattle camps and preach peace to the youth. He blames area parents and the government for abandoning their children without talking to them about the importance of peace.
The message is very clear, always very clear to them. I do say, let the people be in peace. But now what happened to them, they are not accepting even advice, because they are, most of them, they believe and they turn away from God. And it is a punishment to them from God why they are not listening. But I always ask the people to let us intervene, go to the cattle camp to teach them so that they can know what is the benefit of peace.
Makwai says this week alone, police have received reports about three violent attacks that have left several people dead in Lagos State. For VOA News, I am William Sande Mabur in Rumbek.
From Rumbek, we move to Khartoum, where hundreds of Sudanese protesters took to the streets of the capital Wednesday, asking the transitional government to resign for doing very little to implement economic reforms and other objectives of the Sudanese revolution that led to the ouster of former President Omar al-Bashir. Protesters in Khartoum and other states around the country burned tires in the streets and waved banners demanding justice for their loved ones killed during last year's protests. For VOA News, Michael Atit reports from Khartoum.
The protesters demanded the transitional government allow technocrats to lead the transitional period before national elections are held in the country. Other protesters say for 2 years, the government has been reluctant to expedite justice, security and economic reforms. They say the cost of living is still high and it is difficult for citizens to find basic necessities such as bread, medicine, and fuel. Some protesters demanded that the paramilitary group known as the Rapid Support Forces and other armed groups be unified into the Sudanese Armed Forces. They say the existence of various forces under different military commanders remains a threat to the country's democratic transformation. Sudanese analyst and political science lecturer at Khartoum University, Haj Hamad, says peaceful protests shall remain a valuable tool to check on the transitional government in Sudan until objectives of the revolution are met. Hamad says it appears that the peaceful protests are having an impact on the international community to fulfill their promise of supporting political change in Sudan.
It is putting pressure on the government to behave and to become also involved in the austerity by, as you can see, that Hamdok's government took a number of measures and making government more cheaper, and at the same time pressuring the international system, IMF and World Bank.
On Tuesday, the IMF cleared Sudan to begin seeking debt relief on about $50 billion. Prime Minister Abdallah Hamdok praised the Sudanese people for their tolerance and said that though some progress has been made in implementing economic reforms, the high cost of living remains a challenge for most Sudanese citizens.
Transportation is very difficult. Fuel is becoming prohibitive, the prices. Inflation is very high. The economic situation for everyone is deteriorating. So for these reasons, we are expecting still the people will continue to pressure the government.
Sudan's civilian military power-sharing government has taken a series of steps to try to revive a deteriorating economy. Earlier this year, the government took measures to float its currency in order to address heavy government subsidies and sought investment from international donors. Hamad says external pressure have been successful on the military wing of the government to abide by the reforms stipulated in the country's constitutional document.
The military were reluctant, but the American pressure, in fact, it seems very successful. So I think with such kind of a good engagement from the international system, we are moving on the direction of a smooth transition to a democratic election.
Hamad says he expects the protests to continue and that will lead to a real democratic transformation in Sudan.
I think the situation is on the right direction. All people are doing their utmost best in a peaceful manner to amend the crisis that had continued for 3 decades.
The transitional period, which began on October 3, 2020, is expected to last for 39 months in the lead up to a national election. For VOA News, I am Michael Atid in Khartoum.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. Coming up, travelers from some European countries face restrictions. Find out why after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today.
What kinds of infrastructure improvements are the biggest priority in your community?
I would like my roads to be improved because we are not comfortable with the roads.
I think it is hospital. It's hospital because I'm seeing people suffering with their kids. Even mothers, they are suffering when they are pregnant.
Park where children can play and where adults can also meet to hang out will be a big improvement.
For the government to do the street so that when people are driving, their cars cannot be bumping and all over. And the gutters as well. The gutters are full of rubbish and then it's choke as well. If they can clear the dirty things out, it will be perfect.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Several countries have imposed travel restrictions on travelers from Britain amid rising cases of the Delta variant of the coronavirus. Scientists say the Delta mutation is more infectious and now make up around 90% of the new cases in Britain. For VOA News, Henry Ridgewell reports from London.
London's Wembley Stadium hosted England's victory over Germany in the UEFA Euro Football Championship Tuesday. Wembley is also scheduled to host the semi-finals and final, but the European Union wants the matches relocated. Margaritis Skinas, the European Commission Vice President, spoke to reporters in Brussels Wednesday.
Because there will be lots of people. And the idea of a full stadium at the moment we're so worried about the Delta variant.
That concern will be amplified by COVID data from Scotland published Wednesday, which showed that almost 2,000 new infections were associated with football fans travelling to London on June 18th. So far, European states have imposed different limitations on travellers from Britain. Germany has called for EU-wide restrictions. Simon Clark is a microbiologist at the University of Reading.
Without a thorough vaccination program, they are going to see increasing numbers of Delta variant as well. So they're just trying to buy themselves time.
But popular vacation destinations like Spain and Greece are resisting pressure for further restrictions. They are desperate for a bumper tourist season after a disastrous 2020. Hong Kong banned all passenger flights from Britain starting Thursday. These travellers raced to beat the deadline. This student returning from Britain said, "My original plan was to return from the UK on July 7th, but I was afraid I wouldn't be able to come back by then, so I decided to change to an earlier flight." Scientists believe the Delta variant came to Britain from India, where it was first detected in late 2020. Critics say the British government acted too slowly in imposing travel restrictions on India, though Britain denies this. Yet hospitalizations are expected to stay low, say some experts. Again, Simon Clark.
I don't think this time around there's a huge reason for a lot of concern. I think the numbers of hospitalizations will stay low.
That's because the coronavirus vaccines appear to be effective against the Delta variant, and almost two-thirds of British adults have received two doses. Once again, Simon Clark.
Two doses seem to provide really quite good protection, but it's not complete.
Britain is using millions of doses of the AstraZeneca vaccine, but the drug has not yet been approved in the United States, complicating efforts to open a so-called travel corridor between the two countries. Britain still plans to end all domestic lockdown restrictions on July 19th. But other countries are tightening travel restrictions on Britain, an effort to buy time in the race between the Delta variant and the vaccines. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
Efforts are taking place around the world to vaccinate as many people as possible to protect against COVID-19. Officials are tracking the safety and effectiveness of those efforts, but some medical experts say they aren't getting the information they need on Russia's Sputnik V vaccine. Anush Avestian has the story.
The results look too good to be true.
In May, an international group of scientists wrote an open letter to the medical journal The Lancet, expressing concern about Russia's Sputnik V vaccine. The scientists from the United States, the Netherlands, France, Italy, and Russia cited data discrepancies from Gamaleya Research Institute, the Moscow-based producer of Russia's Sputnik V vaccine. Specifically, during Phase 3 trials, the institute reported that Sputnik V was effective against COVID over 91% of the time. But scientists say the institute did not provide raw data so others could check their work and asked for more information from Gamaleya.
Had they provided access to all the source materials, some discrepancies could have been cleared up, but they never did that. So in regard to the results of this research, there are certain doubts that lead to ambiguity in our assessment.
In a response to this letter, Sputnik V developers attributed any discrepancies to simple typing errors and called the scientists' requests strange. Gamaleya researchers noted the vaccine has been approved for use in over 50 countries. But other researchers say that doesn't prove the vaccine is as safe and effective as the developers claim.
Разработчики этих всемирно известных вакцин, можно сказать,
developers of the internationally known Western vaccines not only published detailed reports about the research they'd conducted, but also published the protocols they abided by when conducting research, while Russian scientists refused to publish such protocols, and that raises a lot of questions.
The Russian vaccine developers say their vaccine is safe and that Western medical researchers are being paid by the so-called Big Pharma to keep the Russian vaccine out of the world market. But medical researchers say makers of other vector vaccines, Johnson & Johnson and AstraZeneca, have been working closely with regulators to monitor the safety of their product, while the makers of the Sputnik V vaccine have not.
If the developers of Sputnik start behaving like the developers of Johnson & Johnson, it can simplify the situation dramatically, and it would help them in the first place. Are they going to do it? I don't know.
The World Health Organization say researchers are hoping to learn more during trips to Russia.
We have a team now, I think, who are inspecting the factory. So they go to the different sites and look at the processes.
But for now, Sputnik V hasn't made it to the list of vaccines approved for emergency use by the EU. Authors of the May letter criticizing the transparency of Sputnik V clinical trials say any problems with Sputnik could be easily solved. But reservations about the safety and efficacy of Sputnik V haven't stopped many countries desperate for ways to fight COVID from approving the vaccine for use in their countries. And millions of the vaccine have been administered in Russia and around the world. For Anusha Vitisyan in Washington, NRI's VOA News.
And as Africa lags in COVID-19 vaccination efforts, the U.S. Department of State holds a briefing on U.S. support for vaccine manufacturing on the continent. Muhammad Yusuf reports from Nairobi on Africa's hopes and challenges for vaccine production.
Speaking during a virtual press briefing Thursday, Mark Mashik, a top executive for the U.S. International Development Financial Corporation, said Aspen will receive about $712 million to produce vaccine for people in Africa.
Our consortium of development finance institutions will provide a direct loan to Aspen to, among other things, strengthen their balance sheet with long-term financing, support vaccine production, and expand their operations with core operations based in South Africa. Now, this loan will help them increase capacity to support Aspen's efforts to produce vaccines for the continent this year and next year.
Gail Smith, the U.S. State Department Coordinator for Global COVID-19 Response, says the investment will help Africa deal with long-term health issues.
We see this investment as in the short term, a really valuable response to the urgent need on the continent for vaccines for COVID, but also, and importantly, as a long-term investment in the capacity of the continent to increase its own production of these vital goods so that there's greater availability and resilience over time. So it's a short-term investment with a long-term vision.
The world needs at least 11 billion COVID-19 vaccine shots to at least help communities return to normal lives. So far, less than 2% of Africans have received a vaccine. The need for vaccine has prompted criminals to exploit Africa's weak regulatory systems to bring in phony and substandard drugs. In November, officers from South Africa's Customs and Crime Unit seized 2,400 fake COVID-19 vaccine doses. Zambian and Chinese nationals were arrested. In January of this year, Nigeria's Food and Drug Administration advised the public to be aware of phony vaccine in the market. Adebayo Elonge is the head of Raxol, an organization that fights counterfeit and substandard medicine in Africa using artificial intelligence technology. He says African governments need systems to efficiently distribute and keep track of the vaccine.
They can have selected sites across the country where people can go and be vaccinated, and people pre-book online or by SMS. And then government keeps a record of those people who have come and taken the vaccine at those locations.
Aspen, which is based in the city of Durban, is slated to produce 400 million doses of the Johnson & Johnson vaccine. Distribution will begin in the next few weeks. Mohamed Yusuf for VA News, Nairobi.
That's all we prepared for you today. We now leave you with Dynamic and the song Biniya Tajuba.
Bamba Tajube, Bamba Hilo, Biniya Tajuba, Abu Maye.
Guna de kataki, Biniya Tajuba, Guna de kataki. Kuna de kataki, Biniya Tajuba. She lives a life, this lady of Juba, with a smile of an angel so fine. She works so hard every night and day, and she makes sure she gets her daily bread. I love it when she picks a good Juba plate. My Juba girl will never let me down. She's been used and abused and still will refuse. She's the greatest woman in this world. Guna de kataki, oh, oh. Guna de kataki, oh, oh. Guna de kataki, Biniya Tajuba,
Biniya Juba.
Guna de kataki, oh, oh. Guna de kataki, oh, oh. Guna de kataki, Biniya Tajuba.
When she comes around, everybody gets so loud, cause they know she brings a good Juba vibe.
Jube!
You can see all the Juba elders in a group drinking Kwete Merisa.
Hey!
They love it when she comes and do the Juba dance. This woman is the greatest gift. She's been used and abused and still will refuse. She's the greatest woman in this world.
Guna de kataki,
oh, oh.
Guna de kataki,
oh, oh.
Guna de
kataki. We've been listening to Dynamic and the song Biniya Tajuba. I'm John Tanza. Thanks for allowing us into your phones, homes and vehicles. Remember to always wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and wear a mask when you're in public places to protect you and others from getting COVID-19. Do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers because there is no cure for coronavirus. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Come on, come on, come on, come on, come on, come on, do the Juba dance. Biniya
from Juba, she's fine.
Ruka, ruka.
Come on, come on, come on, come on, come on, do the Juba dance. Kenya from Juba, she's sweet. Woman can gali, can do niya deze Juba.